Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Our mission today is, well, it's built specifically for you. We're going to extract the critical intelligence you need to really understand the current commercial real estate landscape, and we're going to focus in on the pulse of the Dallas-Fort Worth market and, you know, how you should be thinking about positioning yourself in the retail sector.
That's exactly right. As we're sitting here mid-December 2025, the whole U.S. commercial real estate sector it's navigating what we've started calling a profound period of structural recalibration.
Recalibration, that's a good word for it.
It is. And what it means for, you know, investors and operators on the ground is that we're in this intensely bifurcated landscape. Certain sectors are really thriving on fundamental demand, while others are still grappling with some pretty existential debt challenges.
It really is a market of specific winners and very sector-specific pain. Mm. We've synthesized a lot of recent reports here, everything from the latest Fed maneuvers, the surprising resilience of national retail, all the way down to the really sharp variations we're seeing across the big Texas metros. Our goal is to give you that localized intelligence that, you know, cuts through all the noise.
Okay, so let's start with the biggest challenge, the one that's hanging over everything. Debt and monetary policy. Earlier this month, the Fed delivered its third consecutive 25 basis point cut. That brings the federal funds rate down to the 3.50% to 3.75% range. On the surface, that sounds pretty good. A green light for easing.
It does, but when you look under the hood, the internal dynamics just scream uncertainty.
Yeah.
What's really fascinating here is the vote by the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee. It was a highly divided 9-3 split.
9-3. That's a big split.
A huge split. You had two members arguing for no change at all, citing, you know, stubborn inflation expectations. Mm. And then you had one member pushing for an aggressive full 50 basis point cut. And a vote like that, it's pretty rare by historical standards. What does that kind of internal friction really signal to the market?
It signals a total lack of conviction about the path forward. It tells us that even though they've officially started this easing cycle, the Fed's next move is, well, it's completely dependent on what Q1 2026 data shows. Does it confirm a soft landing, or do we see inflation pop back up? For borrowers, that just means volatility and uncertainty remain high, especially long term.
And that long term volatility, I imagine that's reflected in the rate that matters most for commercial mortgages.
Precisely. Short-term rates are coming down a bit, but the benchmark 10-year Treasury note, that's the cornerstone for commercial mortgage pricing, it's just stuck. Stubbornly anchored between 4.0% and 4.20%.
So what's keeping it so high?
Well, this divergence, we call it the sticky yield. It's being fueled by global concerns over the staggering national debt level and also the inflationary risk from proposed tariffs on imported construction materials.
Okay, so if the cost of long-term capital isn't really coming down, what is the immediate consequence for owners of existing commercial property?
The refinancing gap is becoming a chasm. I mean, it's leading directly to systemic distress. Nationally, the CMBS distress rate, that's for commercial mortgage-backed securities, has climbed to 11.63%.
And I'm guessing office is leading the way there.
Unsurprisingly, yeah. Office assets are bearing the highest burden. They've spiked to 17.55% distress.
That is a staggering number.
Mm.
But is there one metric in all that debt maturity data that's the most alarming?
There is. And here's the number that should really keep owners awake at night. Nearly 60% of all distressed CMBS loans are currently past their maturity date without being paid off.
60%.
60%. This is not a temporary hiccup. These assets have effectively failed to find new financing, and that points toward a huge wave of what we call forced liquidity events starting in early 2026.
So forced sales. Mm. Properties being sold at a deep discount because owners just can't roll their debt.
That's exactly it.
Well, that context of financial stress really sets the scene for where the opportunities are. Because while office and some of those overbuilt multifamily assets are drowning, here is the genuinely surprising story. The national retail renaissance.
It really is. Retail has not just survived, it has emerged as this beacon of stability and counter-cyclical resilience. Nationally, the retail vacancy rate has hit a 20-year low of about 5.0%.
A 20-year low.
And that stability is the result of, really, 15 years of almost no new development combined with extremely strong and evolving consumer demand.
And when you dig into those drivers, the story about Gen Z is particularly compelling. We always thought of them as, you know, purely digital natives, but the data tells a very different story. 64% of Gen Z consumers actually prefer shopping in a physical store over online for discovery and interactive experiences. Well, why is that?
It's all about how stores are functioning now. A store isn't just a place to buy things, it's a social destination. That Gen Z preference is directly fueling what we're calling the experiential shift that investors are all chasing now.
So shopping centers are becoming social hubs.
Exactly. We're seeing wellness studios, boutique fitness concepts, and especially entertainment. You know, high-end restaurants, and yes, even dedicated pickleball courts. They now account for a staggering 15% of all new leasing activity nationally. It's the structural embrace of retailtainment.
And when you have that kind of leasing momentum, especially in a high-cost environment, you know, institutional capital is going to follow. We saw a massive $1.6 billion capital raise recently, specifically targeting this sector.
Right. They're chasing certainty. And the highest certainty, by far, is in the grocery-anchored segment. This segment, you know, neighborhood retail anchored by a strong grocer, is running with the national vacancy rate below 4.0%.
Wow, below 4%.
And they're driving robust 4.5% year-over-year rent growth.
Yeah.
So these assets are providing crucial downside protection, which is why investor sentiment for this niche is very positive.
And as we're closing out the year, the holiday numbers seem to confirm that consumers are still spending. Black Friday sales were up 4.1% year over year. What does that final holiday rush look like for physical stores?
The dependency on brick and mortar for that final push is still just overwhelming. The data shows 89% of consumers plan to do the bulk of their shopping in the final 2 weeks before Christmas. That means huge foot traffic right up to Super Saturday. We also saw a real tech integration. 53% of consumers, led by the younger demographics, are planning to use AI tools for comparison shopping and finding deals. The physical store is essential, but the journey to get there is becoming more technologically informed.
Okay, so that national retail resilience gives us the baseline. But now we have to apply it to Texas. For so long, Texas was just seen as this monolithic winner in U.S. real estate.
It's time to retire that idea. Texas is no longer a single market. It's become what we call a high beta proxy for national trends. So whatever's happening nationally, good or bad, it gets amplified here. And we're seeing really sharp regional variations that demand hyper-localized knowledge.
So let's start with the cautionary tale right now, Austin. After years of just explosive parabolic growth, it really seems like the market is paying the price for significant overbuilding.
Austin has, unfortunately, become the poster child for Sunbelt oversupply. The correction is real and it's painful. Multifamily vacancy has climbed sharply to 14.5%. That's leading directly to rent declines and a flood of concessions just to fill units.
And the office distress is just as dramatic, right? Can you give us a specific example of what that looks like on the ground?
Well, the sheer scale of the problem is clear in assets like the 7700 Parmer office campus. This is a massive 911,000 square foot property. It houses major tenants like Google. And it's facing an imminent monetary default on its $177 million loan, which just matured this month.
A campus of that size with those kinds of tenants can't refinance.
That's right. And when that happens, it just underscores how broken the debt market is for anything that's not premium new build office space.
Okay, so let's contrast that stress with what's happening in Dallas-Fort Worth. DFW seems to be defying those gravitational forces. It's arguably the most robust CRE market in the entire country right now. What's the engine driving that?
It's the continued influx of highly capitalized financial services firms, the Yall Street growth we talk about, plus just fundamental demographic momentum. While national office obsolescence is a huge story, in DFW, Class A office rents in Uptown have hit record highs. They're sitting between $41 and $44 per square foot, triple net.
And for our listeners, can you quickly define triple net or NNN and why that pricing is so significant?
Sure. NNN means the tenant is responsible for paying property taxes, insurance, and maintenance on top of the base rent. So when you see triple net rents in the 40s, it just signifies extreme landlord leverage and confidence in that specific location's long-term quality.
But even in a hot market like DFW, aren't we seeing similar challenges with the older, less desirable Class B and C office space?
That's the critical nuance, yes. The DFW market is absolutely bifurcated, but the high-end growth is just so powerful, it sustains the whole narrative. Investors are fleeing the obsolete product and consolidating into the best locations like Uptown. And that's why you see record highs there, even while the broader metro vacancy rates are inflated by older, empty buildings, the kind of buildings that, you know, will likely need to be repurposed, like that HEB acquisition we're about to discuss.
And the industrial logistics market is also just key to DFW scale.
It's staggering. DFW has over 1 billion square feet of industrial inventory. And yet the vacancy rate is holding at a very manageable 8.8%, which is actually the lowest level we've seen since the end of 2023. The demand is just keeping pace.
So this brings us right to the core of this deep dive. DFW retail and mixed use. In the context of Texas's sharp variations, retail really does feel like the sleeper hit here.
I agree completely. DFW retail vacancy is under 5%, and we're seeing rents consistently top $25 in those high-growth suburban submarkets. But the clearest sign of a healthy market isn't just low vacancy, it's the confidence you see in specific high-stakes deal activity.
Let's use that grocery example to illustrate the point.
Mm-hmm.
The Texas grocer, HEB, which is expanding aggressively into Dallas, just secured its first urban Dallas location.
Right, and how they did it is the key. They acquired the 204,000-square-foot Commerce Plaza Hillcrest office complex for $16.8 million. This deal is a textbook example of opportunistic infill retail acquisition. HEB bought a struggling, functionally obsolete office asset from a REIT that needed the liquidity, specifically to demolish it and secure a prime urban site for a new supermarket.
So that single transaction shows the market kind of eating itself, doesn't it? The demand for prime retail locations is so strong that it's driving the redevelopment of struggling office assets.
It confirms that prime location retail demand is inelastic. And this flight to quality isn't just limited to conversions. We're seeing capital flow strongly into top-tier existing DFW assets as well. TRT Holdings, the owner of Omni Hotels, recently acquired the 22-story St. Paul Place office tower downtown. That shows Class A property still attracts high-level buyers.
And institutional lenders are still funding new mixed use that blends office and retail in these prime spots.
Exactly. JLL just arranged financing from KKR for the Quad, which is a new 500,000-square-foot mixed-use campus in Uptown. That confirms that institutional debt is there for premium, amenity-rich DFW developments that combine top-tier office with high-end experiential retail.
And we also need to look beyond the Central Business District. The growth in the northern suburbs just continues to integrate retail into these huge master plan developments.
Look at Plano. They just broke ground on the $750 million Haggard Farm development. The first phase alone includes 100,000 square feet of retail and a 125-key boutique hotel. It reflects this essential trend. Retail and hospitality are not secondary amenities anymore. They're mandatory components that drive foot traffic and value for everything around them.
And we see that same integration happening with transit infrastructure, too. The first phase of the $1.5 billion Trinity Mills Station TOD in Carrollton just completed.
That new phase has 10,000 square feet of ground floor retail right underneath a 436-unit apartment building, all strategically integrated with the dark rail system. It just shows retail's essential role in building density and supporting public infrastructure. This kind of diverse deal flow is what truly confirms DFW's momentum.
Let's turn now to what might be the largest structural shift defining the next decade. We're calling it computational real estate.
This is a crucial insight. Commercial real estate is shifting fundamentally from a shelter-based industry, you know, a roof over your head, to an infrastructure-based industry. And it's being driven entirely by technology. Land value is increasingly defined not by its proximity to a highway, but by its access to massive power grids and fiber optic connections.
And the evidence of this in DFW is just overwhelming. Google plans to spend $880 million to add a new data center in Midlothian, just south of Dallas. That's a huge investment.
DFW is rapidly becoming one of the most important infrastructure hubs in the world. Our data center inventory is expected to more than double by the end of 2026. And to put that into perspective for property owners, data centers accounted for a massive 21% of all new demand in DFW warehouse and distribution properties in 2025. That kind of demand changes the math on all infill industrial land.
And does this computational density affect the traditional retail supply chain?
Absolutely. Those new data centers need constant support, and all the e-commerce fueled by them needs rapid last-mile delivery. That's why we see such high demand for smaller infill industrial space. For example, the 115,000-square-foot Gateway Business Center in Irving, a small bay suite complex, just sold. We saw a bag supply company lease 18,000 square feet in East Fort Worth. These smaller, well-located parks are the crucial arteries supporting both the retail and computational infrastructure.
So if we synthesize this whole deep dive, the sticky debt, the national retail renaissance, and this hyperlocal DFW momentum, what's the clear takeaway for an investor focus on this market?
The clear conclusion is that DFW is leading the Texas charge, and the retail sector, specifically high-traffic, grocery-anchored, and experiential formats, shows the strongest fundamentals and the highest investor confidence. This is all driven by limited supply after years of underbuilding and sticky consumer demand that is shifting toward in-person experiences.
So for investors and operators navigating this, the strategic imperative seems pretty clear. You need operational excellence and, maybe more importantly, a nuanced, localized understanding of supply dynamics. The days of making broad market bets, even in Texas, they feel like they're over. Performance is king, and foot traffic is really the ultimate non-negotiable measure of success.
Precisely. Now, here's a final provocative thought for you to consider as you look toward your capital allocations for 2026. Given the institutional capital flooding into these highly resilient niches like industrial outdoor storage, which has seen rent surge 123% since 2020, and the fact that high construction costs are persisting, how should retail investors be budgeting for the mandated green retrofits and new infrastructure demands that are becoming standard under recent climate accords like COP30?
That's a huge operational burden. For our listeners who might not be familiar with the term, what's the financial risk if they just ignore those requirements?
You risk what the industry calls a brown discount. A brown discount is the lower valuation that assets receive if they haven't been retrofitted for energy efficiency. It makes them environmentally and functionally obsolete much sooner than expected. Ignoring these capital improvements risks significant financial losses, potentially 20% or more, on your property's future valuation. The question is, are you factoring that mandatory infrastructure spend into your budgets right now? That's what you need to be thinking about for the long-term health of your portfolio.